Hi, my name is Stephanie Clark, and I'm the executive director for Amira. Amira is a nonprofit that's in the greater Boston area in New England, and we have a safe home for women over the age of 18 who are sex trafficked. We offer every woman that comes into our home a long-term, trauma-informed, individualized program that helps to meet the needs of their whole person. So it's pretty extensive, the work that we do with a woman, helping her to restore and recover her life from being gone through such an evil thing as sex trafficking. And I'm here today with Kyla from The Samaritan Woman, and we're going to be talking about what happens when a survivor goes AWOL and leaves your program. What do you do? So Kyla, it's great to be here with you.
It's great to have you as well, Stephanie. Let's start off by saying about how many times have you personally experienced this at Amira, if you're allowed to disclose that.
So we opened up our safe home in October of 2015, and we've had 9 women as of today when we're recording this podcast coming to our home. Probably by the time it airs, we'll be up to 10 women having come into our home and into our program. And we have had 4 women leave prematurely. So that gives you an idea. We're at like 50% mark or so. Okay. Maybe a little bit greater on success rate so far. So that's how often it's happened for us. Every woman that has left there's been kind of a buildup, if you will, to it happening. You kind of see like this spiral start to happen, tornado, and usually there's just this buildup that happens that can kind of prepare you. But the very first time, you know, that it happened within the first month of a woman coming into our home and into our program. And it always seems to happen right before some special, awesome time that's supposed to be happening. So our first woman left the day before my birthday. I think we were having that weekend, we were going to have like a party, and there was going to be, because my birthday's in December, so there was going to be like a Christmas party for the staff, and all this stuff was supposed to happen, and she left, and we're like, huh, you know, there's that shot to the heart that you just were not expecting whatsoever. Another woman left right before our annual fundraiser, like literally, I think, 2 days before. Again, it's just this, what it is like, you know, a spiritual battle, like, oh, you're supposed to have this great, awesome thing happen, well, here I'm going to dig in and question and doubt everything that you've ever been doing. And so it always kind of seems to happen right around the time that other things are supposed to be going on that's great and wonderful. That's kind of what we see as a repeat occurrence. I don't think that's by accident. Unfortunately, I don't think that that's going to go away, because it's just a nice way to have Satan mess around with you. So, yeah, so that's how many women we've lost so far. I will say almost every single woman has reached back out in the process, and we're always open to trying to work with them to come back in, depending on what their circumstances are. So I will say that even though they've left, some have reached back out, and we were able to actually bring one woman back in, and now she's back in our program, which is pretty great. So I'm really thankful for that.
So what are, you spoke about some warning signs, some things that kind of are telltale signs that a woman is about to leave or is thinking about it potentially. So what are some of those signs that you've seen or that people can be on the lookout for in this ministry?
Yeah, so I mean, for us, we do a long-term program. We start off with just 30 days. You know, that's the commitment that the woman makes, and that's the commitment made to her. And then after 30 days, if we think that she's a good fit, and if she wants to, then she would sign in for the full program, which can be, you know, like 2 years. And that's scary. That's scary for anyone, that they're going to be going through a 2-year program. But, you know, you're meeting all new people that are total strangers that are sitting there in their utter squares and they're smiling at you. And, you know, it's extremely scary for a woman that has been very traumatized and has lived out on the streets and has self-survived for so long. And so anybody that's in this, you should know off the bat that within the first month, they're going to be fighting that fight-or-flight urge right off the bat. And so that happens all the time. In the first 30 days, we hear, I'm going to leave. I can't handle this. I'm going to leave. That really to us is not a sign. That's just the common response. And so that isn't a warning sign to us. And I would kind of, you know, caution anybody that is in this work or getting into this work to help that, because that's a common thing. You have a woman that doesn't know you, doesn't know your entire team, doesn't know really what's happening, and has lived so that it's marrying two things. Natural instinct is to self-survive, which means keeping her own. And so if a woman is coming in and if I freak out over that, we never freak out really on that point, but we just talk to her and this up and out, cutting it out forward. We watch her kind of get over that initial hump. That fight or flight urge recurs again, usually within the first 3 months, and that's because they're starting to have emotional trauma, and they're now no longer having the ability to squash that emotional trauma. So every woman that we see has a substance abuse addiction, and I think that that's a common thing to say for any single woman that's in America that's dealing with Native American women, or Native, for us we have Native New Englanders, that were trafficked here. The drug addiction goes hand in hand with being trafficked. And so if they are starting now to feel all the things that they're trying to not, the fear light comes again, because we're asking sobriety from them. And we're also asking for them to actually walk through that emotional trauma and work through it, so that way they can become a stronger person and really a person that's healed. That's not easy. No one wants to do that. But, you know, see that you walk up against that. And that's really where we do see an initial danger. And we know, like, if she's communicating, I'm going to leave, I want to leave, while that might be something, we actually might be plotting out, how can I do this? Because if her addiction is driving the bus, it will happen. If, however, we can help her turn a curve, and have not the addiction drive the bus, but her sobriety drive the bus, she'll fight through that and actually stay. And so that's the warning signs that you can see on that is if, you know, it's typically for anybody when the addiction is driving the bus, if they're not communicating, you know, if they are trying to get out more than they probably should be going out, wanting more alone time, you know, because this just means they're probably trying to figure out a way to find some way to be able to use. For us at Amira, we recognize that we're never ever going to prevent them from relapse. All we can do is offer them the ability to be able to talk to somebody, and hopefully they take that option up. But we can't stop them from relapsing. And it's just not something that we're capable of doing. I don't think anybody is. It has to be their choice to not do that. And so that's something that you can kind of see kind of forming up. Other warning signs that we've seen in when trauma meets mental health. And so we've had women, and clearly a result of being trafficked can be borderline personality disorder. And so we've had that, but then on top of that, other mental health disorders, like bipolar, you know, and just it's just a combination of dual diagnosis, which when you're working as well on trauma and you have those dual diagnoses, it can really just set off a spiral that leads to depression and leads to manic episodes and just utterly leads to kind of chaos, and then they just bolt. And there's really no stopping that, and that's kind of unfortunate and extremely sad. By that point, you really need more assistance and help unless you're approved with that. For us, though, at that point, we're looking for help that's beyond the house that we have, and looking to the greater community where is more appropriate for this woman for a period of time so that way she can stabilize once again. If she's not willing to do that, then she bolts and runs, and that's just the unfortunate truth of it. So.
So other than the first month with those, you said those signs wouldn't be counted, and then the third month marker, dealing with addiction and sobriety, and then again with mental health, are there any other telltale signs that you can recall from any of the women that have left the program, like outbursts or relational issues with other residents or staff?
Well, those are just normal. That's just a normal day, an outburst or a relational issue. It's really kind of, it's everything is piling up for the woman, and you're not able to build in that trust, then you're in trouble, you know? And so if it's one thing after another, then she's not ready, and that's just the honest truth of it. You know, they have so many hurdles. You know, as they work through the program in America, they also work eventually on vocational recovery. And for most of our women, they have felony charges on their record, so getting a job is extremely hard and difficult, and it takes time. But then once they get a job and they're making money, they're, again, that fight or flight comes up again. You know, can I do this? Should I do this? Should I run? And if the addiction is driving the bus, they're going to run. If on a job that's taking too long, they run because all they've ever known is they can go back to that to go make money that way. And so there's just so many obstacles that they face, that if you have not built a relationship with this woman and the ability for her to begin to trust you and to trust the work that you're offering and the work that you're doing, then she will run. And so that, I think, is one of the biggest things that you can do. For us, community is such a huge piece. Community not only with women, you know, survivors, you know, in the home, but community with the staff, and community really with the entire partnerships that are out there supporting us. And so it's allowing them, you know, because they lived by the code of the street, which was, you know, snitches get stitches, and you have to survive on your own, and, mm-hmm. you know, literally they are dealing with life or death every single day. And we're asking the exact opposite from them. And the only way to do that is to be completely 100% honest before them every single day. And when you're wrong, you own up to it and you apologize. And I'm always caught off guard. Like the first time I mess up in front of like a new woman and I apologize for it, like how shocked she is. Like, wait, here's this authority figure that's saying I'm sorry. You know, and that is just such a huge thing. Like, we're all humans, you know. We're going to mess up. We're going to hurt each other. But that doesn't mean that you should stop doing this awesome work that you're doing. You know, it means that we have humility about the fact that we're just stupid sometimes. So
that's great. So say you're at the point, hypothetically, that a resident has left. What are the first steps that you and your staff take?
Practically, hopefully we got her keys back, but if we get to change the locks, which that's always you know, a bill I hate to have to pay. Practically, you know, we have a 2-week grace period, you know, because sometimes they just bolt and they leave all their stuff. So we have a 2-week grace period where they can reach back out to us and we can work to get them all their things again. We have a 2-day grace period as well to reach back out, and we can work on, you know, bringing them back in immediately. We always tell them, like, you know, we would hope that they would reach back out, even if they've left, and months and months later, you know, if they want to come back, they can reach back out and reapply. We don't ever want to have to have a bridge burned with us. That's not our hope, and that's not our goal. It also depends on why they left and the circumstances of why they left as well, too. But, you know, we treat every woman as an individual within that. As a human being, when a woman leaves, it's like the worst day of your life. Nobody prepares you for it. There's no class. There's no book. Nothing prepares you for that just utter punch to the gut. It really is the worst feelings I've ever had to go through. I've been through a lot of horrible things, but, you know, you cry, you process, you cry some more, you pray, you don't sleep, you sleep. It's just, you know, I usually wake up at like 2 a.m. and just start thinking through, what did we do wrong? How could we do this better? My brain just starts working. I try to shut it off again, and usually it doesn't shut off. Every staff member, though, has like a different way of dealing with this. Some go back to work immediately, and they just start burning through a bunch of, you know, just stupid stuff and trying to get work done and trying to be busy. And some people need time off, especially if the woman, like, is yelling directly at you and you're taking in so much hate. You might just need, like, a few days just to go and relax and refresh and restore. It all just depends. It's never easy when a woman leaves, and it hurts so much, and it makes you question and doubt why you do this. It makes you question and doubt, did you do the right thing? You know, if we said something different, would they have stayed? You know, if we did stuff different leading up to this, would they have stayed? And really, you kind of have to deal with all those questions, and then you have to come together as a team and say, okay, what do we actually need to adjust? Because there are some things that you might need to adjust. And this is the cycle of debrief. We debrief pretty much like every week on stuff all the time, but especially when a woman leaves, we give it a few days and we kind of let it settle in, we let all of our thoughts settle in, but then we come back together and we say, okay, so this is what we saw happening, and is there anything within our program that we need to adjust, we need to change, to just give the next woman a better shot? That's all we really get to do, is give her the best chance possible to walk a journey of liberation. That's all we get to do. She's the one that has to do it. She has to make the choice to do it. But hopefully we can lay out the easiest, hardest path possible, that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. So I have a quick question that might be answered really easily or fast, or it could be longer than I guess. But at what times during the day is someone more likely to go AWOL?
That really just depends. We try really hard. Like if it's, you know, after hours, like all the staff have gone home, now it's only volunteers, or it's our overnight people who really are just there to sleep. You know, if they're freaking out and they want to leave in the middle of the night, you know, we ask them a simple question. Can you talk right now to Heather on the phone? And if they say yes, then we know that's good. And Heather's question really at that point is, you know, I understand that you want to leave. Are you willing to sleep there tonight and we can talk about this in the morning? And usually they say yes, because the reality is in the middle of the night, they know, where am I going to go? It's really impossible. And if we can get them to do that, we're in a better position than if they do bolt and run. But there's no standard time. there's no standard time that they've left. It's been at all points during the day. And it's also been something that has built up over time. Like she said, I'm going to leave multiple days in a row. And then finally, yeah, today I'm leaving, you know. So it's been that, and it's also been a drop of the hat. Like, literally, this just happens, and nobody realizes and knows, so.
Yeah. So as you were speaking about debriefing an incident like this, what is a way that you and your staff find closure, even just reconciling, you know, with your faith in the Lord and trusting Him with her, ultimately, that how do you come to terms with what has happened?
Yeah, it takes time. It really takes time. And I think it really depends on every person and their own faith and even what they went through with that woman. Some staff are closer to some women, you know, than others. And so it might be harder for some than others. I think the reminder that all of us have whenever a woman leaves, and we immediately start saying it to ourselves, is we know that something was planted. We know something was planted. We know that the work that was done was not done in vain. Because that can feel really so much, you know, like if she's there with us a month, or she's there with us 6 months or 7 months and leaves, like you're like, oh my goodness, all this work that we did, you know, and now she's gone. But we know that it wasn't in vain. And so we kind of say that again and again as a reminder to ourselves to continue on, really, to continue on to do the work for all the other women that are there. Because the reality is, you know, a woman leaves on Tuesday, we still have to show up on Wednesday because there's, you know, five other women that need our help and need our support and are hurting just as much, if not more, because they know what that woman is going back to, whereas we cognitively know it, but we don't know it. And so, you know, you come back to the fact that you do have to wrestle with, you know, that she made that choice, that you couldn't stop her from making that choice. But you just pray that you were one seed that was planted, and maybe you were try number six, because it takes, I've always heard the average is 7 times for a woman to successfully break free from the cycle of exploitation. So you just pray, gosh, God, maybe we were time number six, and next time she's going to get it, and she's going to be free, and it's going to be awesome, and she's going to restore her life. And just pray for her safety. You pray, you know, the evil that she's walking back into, that she doesn't die, that God gives her more days and more opportunities and more chances. And I know that He will, because that's what He does. He's the God that never stops giving us mercy and grace every single day. So you just pray and release that over to Him.
That's beautiful, Stephanie. Thank you so much. My last thought, and you brought this up, and I wish I had asked it sooner. So what's the impact on the other residents that you've seen, kind of the devastation, not only to staff, but how does that affect house dynamics? What's your procedure for addressing that with the residents that are left?
Yeah, so they go through their own process, and it looks different, obviously, because they're dealing, you know, as well as with their emotional trauma and ability to communicate and learning all that, too. And so it really depends on the woman, who she wants to communicate with, what staff member she wants to communicate with. So it just really depends on that, but we sit down with them one-on-one, we sit down with them, you know, in groups, we give them the time and the space to be able to say and express what they need to say, to recognize the feelings that they're feeling, that this is sad, that they are mad, maybe, you know, whatever they just need to express on that. Some women, they try, you know, especially if a woman is talking about how she wants to leave, usually the other women in the home are like the biggest champions of, no, you should stay and you should stick through this. And I know it's hard. I wanted to leave too. And so that's always encouraging to see them do that. And so then if she does leave, that's really like, it's a punch in the gut to her, because she was like, I tried really hard to get her to stay and she didn't stay. And so for them, you know, while we always say over and over and over again, you know, we know something was planted, we know this work was not in vain, I see the survivors say over and over and over again, she's not ready. And I think that that's what comforts them. And I think that whether or not they really kind of know and have faith that their prayer is that they would be ready, because they have this fear for themselves when a woman leaves, like, what if I do that, you know? And so it really, it undergirds even deeper thing, fear for themselves, like, what if they become that woman? And that's all the more reason why we offer so much support to them during that time, because we remind them they are here, they are doing this good work, they are ready, and we can give them examples of why and show them what they're doing. And so it's extremely difficult for them too, especially if they were close to that woman. But even if they weren't, it sucks because they know exactly what that woman is going back to, and it hurts.
Thank you so much, Stephanie, for asking answering my questions. Do you have anything else to add before we go on this topic?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the reality is for anybody that's in this work, you're never going to stop a woman from leaving. So you kind of have to just give that over to God. It's one of those things where you have no control. And that's always a scary reality once you begin to realize the world that we live in. And you have no control over this. No matter how hard you work and how much you love her, you know, I think of, I think it's 2 Corinthians 4, the passage where Paul says, you know, we do not lose heart, and then goes through, you know, that we might be beaten, but we're not crushed, and perplexed but not in despair, and you know, uses these dichotomies. Mm-hmm. That really is the heart of God. When a woman leaves, you've now entered into what the heart of God is. You know, he offers salvation freely to every single human being, no matter what, and so many people still say no. And that's what you stare at when a woman leaves. You know, you're offering everything to her for free. You're giving her a chance at life, and then she chooses death. And so it hurts so much. But then as you dive into your faith, you realize this is exactly what God is doing. And God still goes the next minute to offer freedom again. You know, he does not stop. Does not quit. He will not quit. I love that about our God. And so that gives me strength to continue on, to move on, to keep going, because there's going to be another woman. The reality is the phone call is going to come in tomorrow, you know, and so you just have to keep moving forward, because this is what God does. His mercies are new every day, and you do not lose heart. So that would be my encouragement. It's going to happen. It's inevitable, but don't lose heart.
Thank you again, Stephanie, for speaking out on this topic. We thank you so much for speaking with us again and for giving us your insight. We thank you for the work that you do at Amira, and we wish you luck on the coming endeavors.
Thanks.